Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we are here to talk the three-episode aftermath of losing Emily Prentice, which there has never been a major change to a show's status quo that has been so quickly undone. It's kind of funny watching these in retrospect because it's like, we do that huge lead up to her getting killed, and then everybody talks about her for a few episodes, and then she comes back. Like, that's crazy.
Not for Criminal Minds.
Not for Criminal Minds.
There was a couple of times in the last three episodes, because I did watch them again yesterday. Oh.
Was it fan response? But it's like, do you think it was like immediate fan response?
No, I would say that, I was going to say Rebecca. I probably quit and they had to do something fast. And so then it was easy enough to just call her back and she was
available. Happy to take the money to do one more season. Because she comes back for all of season 7 and then leaves at the end of season 7.
Yeah. And
for good this time, wink.
Yeah, but that's only because I think what I would say would have happened is that she didn't have anything, because she got fired so reasonably abruptly.
Right.
She didn't have anything else on
ready
on
to
tap,
go, yeah.
Ready to go. Like, she's got something going now. That the show's over, right? So she didn't have anything to go right on tap. So she was available. So she decided to take it. But then she started working her contacts and everything else and trying to figure out what the hell she was going to do if this happened again. So I think she was better prepared. I don't know.
The second time she got fired or quit.
I don't know what the story over that one was exactly, yeah. But
there's some backstory there that we're really going to have to find out about.
Yeah, I know. We keep saying we're going to find out about these backstories and that we never do.
Well, it's hard to. I go and I look for gossip and it's harder to find than you'd think. I guess Criminal Minds isn't a popular enough show that people are desperate to spend all sorts of time gossiping about it. I just find the occasional like, People article about it, and guess what? They don't get really into the nitty gritty.
Well, not only that, but you have to figure that they've got a pretty good CBS publicity machine.
Right, keeping this stuff locked up.
Plus, it seems that, you know, given nobody's podcasting about this, and they podcast about everything.
That's
you know, people have these little shows and stuff like that. I don't see anything on YouTube that is, you know.
Focused on Criminal Minds, yeah. Enough people are pursuing the show the way we've started to. So, yeah.
It's weird.
For us to do this research.
At some point in our lives, you know, we'll sit down and do it.
And hopefully we can get people the answers that we're desperate to hear.
Yeah. We're desperate. We just want to know what went on. And I think, but also the fans do tend to be very forgiving. I don't know what the average age for the fan of this show was.
Yeah.
And I know that demographic is out there, but,
it's actually a really good question. Who's watching Criminal Minds?
Yeah. Who's watching Criminal Minds? Right?
Yeah. Is it part of CBS only being a network for old people, the way they say about NCIS, or?
But I can't see that with Criminal Minds.
No, it's so unpleasant, and it seems like it would skew younger.
Well, all the people, like, I know.
Who watch it
do tend to be, younger, but they also, you know, all generally speaking, quit. I know somebody who's just started to watch it again and decided that they would watch it again while we were doing the podcast.
That was very sweet of them.
Wasn't that sweet of these? But these are people I know, right?
Yeah, of course.
And so I don't know how that holds. But I would say most of them, this is the season where I think you may, the next season 6 and season 7 seems to be where
a lot of people checked out.
A lot of people checked out. A lot of people checked out. And I think the Jennifer Lopez thing.
Jennifer Lopez?
Or no, what's her face? Who was it that in season 10?
Oh, Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Love Hewitt, yes. Jennifer Love Hewitt was an attempt.
Get people's, get attention back on the show. But you know what? We're going to be talking about that in a few weeks.
Yeah. But no, it is, it's always strange when I'm looking at things and you look at the tubes and it's almost as if CBS has a real heavy hand or has had a real heavy hand on anything to do with the show.
Yeah.
Maybe
not overbearing per se, but they're definitely on top of everybody all the time.
And because, I can see NCIS skewing older. Yeah. But I have a really hard time with this
thinking
one.
Criminal Minds that way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I can even see Bones skewing older. But this is not, I mean, the skewing older is not the generation that this is. The Criminal Minds has to appeal to a generation who fell in love with horror movies in the 80s.
Absolutely.
And the 90s, okay. I mean, to my way of thinking, that's got to be what it is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're going to talk about a horror movie themed episode this week.
This week, right? Yeah. And that's what got me to thinking about some of this stuff, right? That it's. The skewing older doesn't hold for this, but maybe I'm wrong.
All right. Well, you know what? We can do some demographic research on that later. For right now, let's focus on the first episode this week. Episode 19.
Oh. Okay. I don't know why I keep thinking we've talked about this one already.
Well, I don't know either, but get to it.
I want to start with Handling Waters. With Friends Like These, number 19. With Prentice dead and Seaver officially an FBI agent and team member, the BAU sets out to determine whether or not a killing team with a pack mentality is responsible for the deaths of two Portland, Oregon residents. Meanwhile, Reed becomes emotionally involved after an unexpected twist changes the course of the investigation. Oh, I know what they're trying to refer
to. They're trying to talk about him worrying about how he's might have schizophrenia. Yeah, how he's afraid that and I'm like, dude, you're not 25. You know, it would have cropped up by now.
Well, that's my line. As I said, I still haven't looked at late onset schizophrenia.
Yeah, but it's like, come on, dude.
If you are genetically predisposed to get schizophrenia, you should have had symptoms by now because you're in your 30s.
Well, he's not. I think he's 29 in this season because he's like in his late 30s now, and this is season 6, so he's probably late 20. He's probably 28, 29 in this season. We would have to check, but I would guess that is the character's age at this point. But yeah, he would definitely have had symptoms by now if he was going to have symptoms. Although then again, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, he was having severe psychosomatic headaches, so.
But that was the mojo.
Oh no, I know, but I'm just saying they were setting up for him to be worried about, schizophrenia. Now you and I both know he's having the headaches because of his unresolved child abuse issues, which, oh my God, are we going to talk about next episode? Because it's terrifying. Something terrifying happens next episode that I was blown away when I heard it, and it's a line I'd completely forgotten, but we'll get there. But this episode, which raises a question I never thought would be raised again on the show, which is, I guess demons are real?
Because we've done two episodes now with that.
This is the second episode that ends with like, maybe demons are real on this show? Because, we talked about, you know, the wonderful Boyd Crowder episode, right?
Yeah.
The frankly wonderful, you know, just crazy, crazy episode with Boyd Crowder where I guess demons were real. Like they're refusing to say that this priest molested the four guys. And that's why they murdered him. Like their refusal to just say that meant that the only possible conclusion was that demons were real. So it was a very strange episode. And now this episode out and out just says demons are real. Cause they're like, no 5-year old has schizophrenia. That's not how schizophrenia works. Right. So what, who on earth were the three ghostly figures he was seeing at 5 years old who weren't affected by, antipsychotic medication and weren't affected by, electroshock therapy?
Or an exorcism.
Well, yeah, I mean, but, the exorcism, obviously. It's not like they got an official exorcist out from Rome. They were just like trying to do an exorcism.
No, they were doing a Protestant exorcism.
Yeah, exactly.
This was a small Protestant fundamentalist cult that was doing. No, but not only that, but just remember when, and I brought this up, you've forgotten it.
I'm
because with the possession episode, just a few episodes ago, right? When they're in Lafayette.
Yep.
Right? Reed is having visions of something that he couldn't possibly have seen, but were real.
Yes.
So who was giving him those visions?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, maybe Reed's headaches are his connection with the divine.
And not his mother.
Maybe it's not just abuse. Maybe he's got a connection with the divine that we don't understand really. Okay, now we're just making fun of the show. But yes,
making fun of the show, but it is, yes.
No, it is weird in this episode. Like, it's legit weird in this episode when you watch this episode where it's like, yeah, they seem to be saying the demons are real. Because how else do you explain the end of this episode? Because they go back to him into the asylum on medication and having had, both on medicated and having had electroshock therapy, and the demons are still there.
Yes. Well, plus, for heaven's sakes, you know, the nurse going, the electroshock therapy worked.
Excuse me,
he just came out. How could you possibly?
How are you possibly diagnosing that it's already fixed? I know. Yeah, I mean, hey, I'm right there with you. It's a very dumb line.
There's a reason we're making fun of this episode.
It's a very dumb line.
Because it was just like a, it was just, okay, you know, I hate, you know, okay.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I think the nicest part, the opening was so nice that Penelope had made cupcakes and they'd all gone to Ashley Seaver's,
graduation from the,
the academy. That was nice. Really nice. And you know, and it turns out that Erin wants her to be hired full time, so she's hired full time for the team.
Yeah.
And
I like they specifically say she's not here to replace Emily. Well, you're two members down, so she kind of is. You know, like,
yeah, because you're not putting her in JJ's role.
Yeah, so she kind of is No, you don't want to think of it that way, but let's be honest here. You're two people down. According to the way this team works, which is throw more and more people with the exact same skill set at the problem until they solve it. You know, don't bring any outside or radical thinkers or people with different specialties. Just throw the exact same people at the problem over and over again until somehow that gets the problem solved. That's their theory anyway for how this stuff should be done. Like, they just need more profilers. They need more bodies on the team.
Well, no, it is truly bizarre that they went completely away. They tried in the beginning a little bit with people with their separate jobs, a little bit.
Yeah.
But, that quickly, and now it's just, and this is why it became boring. That's what's, I already said that before about my toe person, you know, just going, my foot person, you know, going, well, yeah, but it just became like every other show. So why bother?
Ouch. And,
yeah. That's what she said.
Yeah. No, I get it.
You know, and so then she just stopped watching it too. Allison was watching it.
Yeah.
And she didn't like Prentice, but that isn't why she's stop watching it, clearly, although she says that is, but Prentice had been on for three seasons, and she'd still watch
four
it.
Four seasons, six, she'd still seven. Watch it, but
6, 7 is when everybody seems to have just checked out.
By the way, one of my favorite moments, you know how I often make fun of their use of geographical profiling?
Yeah.
I swear to God, it had one of my favorite, examples of it this week because, he starts talking about Reed starts talking about geographic profiling, and he's like, according to my algorithm, the killer probably lives in this area, right? And then you see that on a map, he has drawn a circle around one of the, murders and a circle around the other of the murders. And I'm like, so your algorithm is just a compass.
Okay. No, what it is, he's drawn a Venn diagram and he doesn't understand what an algorithm is. The writer of this episode doesn't know what an algorithm is because that's not an algorithm.
Well, no, I think what they're saying is I think the implication is that he has used Gesundheit, the algorithm to decide how big to draw the circles. But really, he just drew two circles on a map. I know.
Maybe he doesn't know what a Venn diagram is.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, no, I mean, that is like how you triangulation makes sense. But the weird part about it is, if you only have two data points, triangulation, like that kind of search is not useful. Right? Because you don't really have a good sense of how big you should be drawing the circles if you only have two bodies. Once you get a third one, you can start doing stuff. And I mean, you really do need a lot of data points before you can get an accurate geographic profile. But the idea that, yeah, here are the two places he kicked down the door. Let's just draw two circles around those. And we'll go from there. It's quite a stretch from my point of view. And I don't think I'm the only one. Yeah.
This episode was just too... It's
kind of dumb and kind of silly. Yeah. Well, one thing I did like about the episode...
It was okay.
It's not terrible. But one thing I did like about the episode is they don't, like, try and trick you into thinking he's not, like, that those people are real at all. Like, no, right from the start, it is 100% clear that these people are all in his head, because... Nobody, like, they're not shy about it, about nobody reacting to it, them. Like, you look back at the Sunset Boulevard episode, right?
Yeah.
Now, the Sunset Boulevard, they play with it a little. I mean, we know right away, but they play with it a little because there's no reason, even when they're in the train station, that anyone would be talking to his mother or paying attention to his mother.
Oh yeah, I know. I think you can still be a little bit surprised when
that
happens.
In that episode. Whereas in this one, I think plenty of people watching that episode.
And even I at the beginning didn't think about it. It was only till later that I went, well, okay, Sunset Boulevard. But even in Sunset Boulevard, she was alive, right?
Yes, exactly. Like they're doing obviously Sunset Boulevard. And I think for the casual viewer, it isn't until you get to the end of the episode where you're like, oh, it's also Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think I suspect that is how the casual viewer engages with that episode. They're like, oh, they're doing Sunset Boulevard. And then right at the end, the twist is, no, we were also doing Psycho.
Yeah. And that's perfectly fine. Like I really, it's a fun episode. So anyway, yeah, that's a fun, but now let's get back to this episode.
Oh no, absolutely. But I just think, I think it's relates because they weren't trying to trick the audience this week. There was no these other three people. Cause again, these people are loud and obnoxious and whatnot walking through the store and everybody would be reacting to them, but nobody is. So they're just telling the audience right away.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in the flat, and then like two scenes later, we get the grocery store flashback where the guy, you know, just flat out tells you there was nobody with him, but he was talking to empty space. So there you go.
But it looked like he was, what did he say? He said it looked like
he was arguing with the air or something.
That he was being followed.
He was looking around like people were, like he was being followed. That's it.
Yeah. That was what he said.
Although it was a good observation that they're like, yeah, they left bloody footprints everywhere, right? But it's one size of shoe, right?
Yeah.
It's one size of shoe and it's all the same tread. And it's like, how could you have a gang of killers, all of whom have the exact same size feet and wear the exact same shoe? It's a good observation. like, it's crazy monstrous overkill and, you know, way too many stabs and whatnot, but fundamentally, there's just a complete lack of evidence that it's any more than one person. So, yeah, I think that was well done. That was well observed by the characters. That was a good little deduction from them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was very happy with that one. What was the other thing that got me, though? Just how casually this episode is like, yeah, it's all the parents' fault. Just throws it in there. God, his mother's a monster, right?
Somebody wrote her just completely. And again, when he goes to the church, I'm sorry, but okay. Maybe preachers and maybe churches in America are different. Their preachers are different. I don't know, but I'm just going the way that guy, maybe it's the direction. Who directed this episode? Someone by the name of Anna J. Forster.
But the way this guy is acting.
The way this minister is acting is just terrible.
Yeah. Well, cause the thing is, this man,
you know, and then he,
this man, then, obviously troubled guy, he's freaking out. He wants an exorcism. Just say, come into my office. Let's talk about this some more.
Yeah.
And while he's going to the office, call the cops and then keep him there until the cops arrive.
Yeah.
Like, here's a man who is full
clearly
stop delusional.
Yeah. Right?
Delusional, hasn't slept, might be on drugs, is demanding an exorcism. This would be a good time to involve the authorities, and you should know that.
And you should be trying to calm him down, not, yeah. We don't do exorcisms anymore.
I know, right? He's so hostile to this guy.
And it strikes me, I'm sorry, but you're again Episcopalian, and Episcopalians were never big on exorcisms anyway.
Anyway, yeah, that's absolutely
You know, it's not
right.
The question of not doing them anymore. It's a weird, it was just weird. Again, their complete lack of any kind of, what's the word I want, research being done on the creation of their characters.
Yeah. And I think that definitely factors in.
No research. Who cares?
No research. They're not putting in the work.
No.
And that's what it comes down to. But I mean, they don't put in the work a lot. I swear to God. I'm almost done up at season 11. And I swear to God, there was an episode where they did so little research that they went to the DEA and there's a giant sign on the wall that says Drug Enforcement Agency. It's the Drug Enforcement Administration. Note from the person who wrote the episode to all of the producers who looked at it to the guys in the props who had to make that sign, no one just sat down and took 1 second to Google DEA to make sure that's what it stood for. These are not people who care about research.
Nope.
But anyway, it's not actually that hard to catch this guy. He has, it's a good observation to say that someone who's obviously having a schizophrenic episode, that regularly schizophrenic episodes are interpreted as demonic possession. Both by society at large and by the people themselves. So when they hear about the salt water and get to exorcism, that's a completely natural leap.
Yep. Don't have
what I don't understand is, and tell me this, tell me if you understand this, how, when he was 7 years old or whatever, did he set a fire that killed specifically only the three people who had helped with his exorcism? I just don't understand that happened, because specifically we're told that it happened, if he had flailing around in the exorcism, knocked over the candles and started a fire and they died, I would understand that. But we're told that he killed them in a fire like months later.
Oh yes, but he was
demonically possessed. I know, but it's like, I don't understand.
No,
why
no,
everyone...
but he was acquitted of that too.
But at the end of the episode, he says, I started the fire.
Yes.
And that's his admission. And we're expected to believe at the end of the episode that he did start that fire. And I'm like, how did he manage that? How did they all end up in the same place? How did he manage to start the fire? And I'm like, well, it's obviously demonic possession, but I don't know why the characters aren't reacting a little more strangely to the fact that he pulled that off as a child.
Well, I yes, well, you know.
just yet another thing to question.
Well, plus, he was a child when he set that off. Right. Yeah. And these demons haven't come back as children. They've come back as adults.
No, they were adults when they were killed. No, you're remembering that. No, like he killed the three people. When we see the photographs of the three people he killed, they're the hallucinations yet. He killed the three people who had helped hold him down as part of the ceremony for the exorcism. Those are the three people he killed. They were just members of their church. Right. Which raises the question, how on earth did he get, a 7-year-old child, get three members of the church alone in a room so that he could burn them all to death? Like, I don't understand that part of the story.
Well, I'll have to go back and take a look at that again, because I thought it was more people.
No, it was just three people. He only burned three people in a fire.
No. I understand that. I'm talking about at the exorcism.
Yeah, no, at the exorcism there were. There was the priest, the three people, and his mother.
No, there were more people than that.
I only saw like five. But I mean, you can go back and check.
Yeah, there's no harm in it. There's more people than that.
In any event, the fact that he was able to murder three adults in a fire when 7 years old, when they weren't his family members, is completely absurd to me.
The whole thing, like, I was wondering, as I'm going through it this time again, I'm going, okay, did they ever explain what triggered him? And so, because I had watched it last week, and then I went and watched
it. Yeah, he's in apartment
yesterday.
Fire.
Okay, yeah. But.
Okay.
You see, normally, and the reason when I watched it, that's one of the reasons I went, I thought, oh, I bet you I've forgotten some of these episodes. So I watched them again yesterday. So this time I'm listening because I couldn't remember what the trigger was. I'm trying to remember what the trigger was. And so I'm listening carefully, listening, and I'm going, I know why I don't remember the trigger, what the trigger was.
Why?
Because it is there. It is there that he had been in a fire 10 days
before. Yeah, an apartment
fire
whatever. 3 months ago or whatever.
And that triggered it off. And, or 10 days ago or whatever.
It doesn't matter what the number was.
Yeah, no. Yeah. But. Somebody forgot in the, to write, when they were writing the script, somebody, in this case, Janine Sherman Berwa, forgot to put in the line, oh, that's what triggered him.
You're right, so you don't pay attention to the line.
You know, like they always do that.
Yeah.
And
they always say,
that must have been the trigger.
It's true. They left that line out
always,
this time. You're absolutely right.
The line isn't in there. So yes, they
didn't
tell us
it didn't jump out at you.
They just didn't tell us what the trigger was.
Okay. That's a strong point.
it's very funny. And that tells you how, when you are watching things that are predictable.
Yeah. How much you rely on the tropes.
On the tropes and
the format.
And the formatting, right?
Yeah.
For your info, because I couldn't remember which is what.
Well, I mean, I think it's, I hate to say it, but I mean, there are so many generic episodes of this show that will put you to sleep. Mm-hmm. Like, they will. So yeah, you were expecting to hear, you're expecting them to spoon feed you this stuff, and the one time they don't, you're like, I mean, me, I've always watched this show incredibly analytically. So it doesn't happen to me, but I totally understand why it happened to you. Cause you're right. They just blow past that one line.
Yeah, they just blow past it. It was there.
Yeah, the line's in there. They just blow past it in a moment.
And it was so funny. It just tells me something how I watch this show.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, but yeah, it's not a terrible episode, but it does raise some interesting questions about the theology. Right. Of the world of Criminal Minds, which we're actually going to be talking about in about 3 weeks when we get very deep into suspect behavior.
You know what's interesting? I probably should do a paper on this.
Yeah.
There's probably a paper in there. Not that
about
I...
what exactly the theology of Criminal Minds
what
is.
What exactly is the theology of Criminal Minds? So I just have to decide where I would
well, what's your take and where would you, send it?
Yeah,
that's
no, some cultural studies magazine.
Would be happy to take that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a project we can look at. We're going to talk about once we're through Suspect Behavior. And in case, I know we've been talking about Suspect Behavior a lot. And yes, just like The Inside, we're not going to make you wait. Just for the record, we're not going to make you wait 6 weeks while we do two episodes a week, Suspect Behavior before we get to back to Criminal Minds. We're only going to be doing one Thursday episode of Suspect Behavior. And then that again will be Monday bonus episodes after that. And you're going to have your regular Thursday Criminal Minds episodes going forwards. Just so, you know, we don't want to keep people away from the main show for too long. I was going over our list and I'm like, yeah, generally between seasons, we only keep people waiting a week or two. So I don't want to get in the habit of like, now 7 weeks about the show Suspect Behavior. Because spoiler alert, nobody watched the show Suspect Behavior.
Now, while I agree with your analysis, it would have been nice if you discussed this with me.
Well, by the way,
would have come down on your side anyway.
Oh, no, of course.
I am
springing it on you, but this is the one good time that we can, I will say I feel like I can make that kind of executive decision because we are officially 5 months ahead in recording these. So, you know. We've got a bit of a buffer.
Although who knows what'll end up happening. It's probably a good thing because when we did The Inside, we had initially thought we would do sort of like 3 episodes at once and the rest of it. And we ended up creating 7 episodes.
Too much to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. We created 7 episodes. And so.
And I think there's going to be that much to talk about. I'll be honest with you. I went back and I watched the first episode of Suspect Behavior to get myself ready for it. And there's going to be a lot to talk about on this show.
So that's why you made. Okay. So let's get back to Criminal Minds.
Next episode, Hanley Waters.
Hanley Waters. Yeah. When a mass shooting at a Tampa, Florida gun store claims the lives of 4 people, the BAU attempts to profile a budding spree killer determined to take down a specific target. Meanwhile, Hotch interviews each individual team member about their feelings regarding Prentice's death. This one I didn't need to watch a second time. And although I brought it up, I started because I didn't remember which one it was, except that when it opened, I just went, oh, I can't watch this again. Just so sad.
It's just a depressing hour of television. There's no other way to describe it. Yeah.
It's so sad. This poor woman.
Yeah. It's just an awful, depressing episode of the show.
And again, you know, nobody decides to go and have counseling. I think that there's a big problem. I mean, this goes to this will be my sociology issue question is, The purpose of religion has always been to create community.
Yeah.
In one of the main purposes, anthropologically, probably biologically speaking, if you...
It wouldn't surprise me if there's a biological component, but sociologically.
There are biologists, okay. Dennett in particular, people listening.
Who will make that argument, yes.
And there's a lot to be said for it. So it was, you know, it was a positive development. The problem is that I'm looking at this episode and I'm just going, oh my Lord, if she ever needed a whole bunch of nosy Parkers running around with her after her child died in this horrible, horrible accident, this is one of them. She needed a whole church
full and a whole neighborhood.
Her husband.
Checking in on her every day.
Her husband needed a whole bunch of support, and it looks like neither one of them had anyone, and they depended on one another, and of course they fell apart.
Oh yeah, which it's not at all strange for couples who lose a child to do.
No,
it's the most normal thing in the world.
Yeah, even when they've got all the supports and the family and the rest of it.
Yeah.
You know, but when you don't have any, and clearly this woman had no one, and her husband seemingly had no one.
No, and the thing is, each of them had to grieve in their own way, and because they weren't going to therapy, they couldn't wrap their head around the fact that each of their ways of grieving, like a therapist would have said that it's okay that you each grieve in your own way.
Yeah.
And the fact that they have diametrically opposed methods of grieving, right, is part of what broke them up. but they had no one telling them that that was fine. And there's no wrong way to grieve. I mean, there is a wrong way to grieve, shooting 7 people, but generally speaking, there's no wrong way to grieve.
Well, and as I would say, and then you compare this to the way they handled Paul.
Yeah.
In The Inside and the loss, Paul and his wife and the loss of their child.
And
because they had somebody
in a car accident exactly the same way.
Well, yeah, you know, I was going to brush over that, but.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, you know, another case of cribbing another episode and changing it and making it much, much worse. Because what happens is that, you know, in that one, at least Paul had someone watching out for him.
Yeah. He's got a support system.
A support system that knows he's grieving.
Yeah.
Even though he's got the brave front, right?
And oh yeah. He's trying not to have to grieve. He's trying, yeah. You know, and he's closing himself off.
Yeah.
And as we said when we were talking about that amazing about the episode, The Inside, this is going to destroy their marriage. Like 100%. Them not being, Paul not being able to talk about this is going to destroy their marriage.
Yeah.
And that is why it's so well done.
And Webb steps in.
Yeah. Oh, God. And makes Rebecca, you know what? We're just going to start talking about that. Let's not do that. Because we're just going to start talking about how good that episode is again.
But this
before we get into the details of this episode.
This is powerful because of the actress.
Oh, she's so good. Well, I mean, she was just coming off the, what do you call it? The Boston Legal, not Boston Legal, The Practice.
Yeah.
Like, what is the prequel to Boston Legal? The Practice. She's just coming off The Practice and she's so talented and, oh God, I mean, on some level, you just want to slap this woman and say, stop making your child's death about you. but she plays it so truthfully.
Oh, you just, I'm sorry, but you just believe it.
Oh, no, 100%.
Like, she makes you go with her and on the journey.
Every step of it.
Yeah.
Every step of it. Like, you just completely believe every step of this journey with her. And it's like, you feel every bit of agony because she's so good at this.
Yeah.
Now, she's incredibly talented and she does an amazing job. I know, and it's great. But before we get into, you know, the chase for her, I just want to point out that speaking of people not getting therapy, this episode has the single most mind-blowing line in the entire history of Criminal Minds. When Aaron is sitting down and talking to Spencer, and Spencer's like, I haven't talked to a therapist since my parents got split up. I'm like, you were 6. You are a 29-year-old man whose mother was a schizophrenic, who went to college at age 14, has been addicted to heroin, and has been shot, beaten up, and held at gunpoint multiple times. One time, you almost got anthrax. And in those 23 years, you've never been to therapy. Oh my God. No wonder your life is a train wreck.
I'm sorry.
It's no, but it's like, if that single line of dialogue justifies every single thing we've ever said about the Spencer Reed meta-narrative.
Yeah.
Everything about his sickness and his self-destruction and his inability to connect with people. All of it is right there in that one line of dialogue.
But I'm sitting there saying, and you know that the Criminal Minds people don't even know that they're setting
the
up
this idea.
They're setting up this meta narrative.
The story he tells is, I didn't even want to go to therapy. I was forced to, so I had to figure out what they wanted to hear. So I wouldn't have to go to therapy anymore. You're describing the mindset of a psychopath. Okay? That's what you're describing, Spencer. A child psychopath who just wants to not be in therapy anymore. So he's like trying to figure out what lie to tell so he doesn't have to. Oh my God.
And
it's a shocking moment. And the episode just rushes right past it.
Whew. And the BAU has never forced him into therapy.
Again.
And it explains how he has gotten this far. And it explains how he passed all his psych evals to get into the FBI.
Yep. He manipulates people.
Yep.
He manipulates people and he's good at pretending. He's good at faking that he's okay. But fundamentally, Spencer Reed is not okay. He is as far from okay as you can get.
And the closest he came to any kind of self-revelation was not in the Revelations episode, but in the Anton Melchick episode.
Anton Yelchin
episode.
Yeah, that's the closest he got to self-awareness.
Because that's why he couldn't handle that guy. Yeah.
No.
Because that was him.
Yeah, and he can't, and he's just like, no, you just have to choose not to, you don't have to get help, you just have to choose not to do it. That's what I do every day. Of course, he can't say to him, that's what I do every day.
As we now know.
As we now know.
Yeah, every day. And that's why he does go down these horrendous
paths and become incredibly self-destructive. It's like one line of dialogue. They give you this incredible window into the mind of Spencer Reed that they haven't managed in 6 years.
Yeah, and it's actually two writers who I don't think ever wrote anything else on the episode. Someone called Alicia Kirk and Randy Huggins. They both did each a separate episode in this season.
But they were only there for season 6.
I don't know if there were other. They did Sense, Memory, and Today I Do.
Oh God, those are such garbage episodes.
Yeah, so, there are a lot of new writers this season, and not a lot of them, some of them stay,
but most of them don't. Yeah. All right. The one thing I will say that I didn't quite buy in their profile, cause they're like, she's going after heroes, she's going after first responders. No. But it's like, if you describe the situation, every time she shot somebody, the security guard, the two paramedics, it's because people tried to stop her.
Yeah, that's all.
She never targeted anyone.
No. If the guys in the gun store had just left her alone, they'd still all be alive. And called the cops and said this woman took
a gun.
Took bullets and a gun.
They got into their head that, oh, well, we've got to intervene. It's our store and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
They got their ridiculous, you know, well, we've got to do something stuff going on, and they got killed for it.
Yeah.
And the other guy is trying to protect a child.
Yeah.
Like the more, it's interesting. They don't understand, even though there are people there to report it, right? Like they could have gotten to she had lost her child so much faster because they focus on the fact that she shot a security guard. Not that the security guard was defending a child from her.
Yeah.
Like, that's the key element here. It's not that she saw the security guard, it's that she was trying to grab a child
and the security guard intervened.
And thought the child was hers. And people around her, when she was screaming, could have told the cops that. But no one does, so the team doesn't get the key information. So later on, they get to extrapolate maybe her son died, but it's like they could have known her son died immediately because she tried to steal a child who she thought was her son and then shot a security guard who tried to protect the kid. Like, that's all the clue you need, isn't it?
Like, yeah, I didn't understand. I thought that right away. Well, didn't anybody bother to tell them?
Yeah. What she was doing in the mall. Like, they don't have security cameras in the gun store, but they got security cameras in the mall. It's the food court. There's security cameras everywhere. You can see her grabbing at this child.
Yeah.
And then the guy separates them, and then and she keeps reaching for the child, and then she shoots him. Yeah. Like,
because
she's obviously focused on this child. Oh, okay, well, it's not her son. She had no connection to the son. Have you ever seen this woman before? No. Okay, well, obviously she's identified this child as her own son who she's lost. There you go, problem solved. Oh, any dead kids on this day? Well, exactly 1 year ago on this day, a kid was killed in a car accident. Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah, they could have had this so much faster if they had just looked at the videotapes from the mall. But as far as I can tell, they didn't, and the episode makes less sense because of it.
Well, maybe they thought she was a demon possessed by a demon. After all, they just come off the previous episode where there obviously were demons, so.
Yeah, obviously demons are real, so there you go. No, it's,
sorry.
It's not, no, it's fine. Because again, I don't want to criticize this episode too much, because the emotional core of this is so strong.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a beautiful episode, and it's such a sad story, and it's so well told.
Yeah.
Right? That I in no way want to suggest that it's like it's bad, but even in an episode that's good, it's got the fundamentally lazy plotting that Criminal Minds is always known for.
Yeah. And it
hurts. Just that. It hurts. Right? It really does hurt. So, let's move on to our third episode of the evening, which is a huge disappointment, but we'll get there.
Well, yes, this is their horror-themed episode.
Yep.
It's called The Stranger. When three San Diego, California college students are stabbed to death in their off-campus homes, the BAU sets out to track down a stalker-turned-serial killer who targets women resembling a face from his past. Meanwhile, Hotch comes under scrutiny after Section Chief Strauss starts reviewing the team's grief assessment forms. No, but never mind. We don't care.
Yeah, close enough.
Close enough. It was. I mean, they start off, you know, with the team, with the four members of the team.
Leaving a horror movie.
Going to see a horror movie. And I mean, again, we're away from the, I mean, what is, never mind. I just don't even want to talk about relationships and Garcia and the stupidity of all of this. You know, but, you know, I mean, it's fine. And they have these discussions and, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, so Rachel Nichols actually has some lines here.
Finally.
And this is the episode where she finally gets something to do.
Yeah, because she didn't get anything to do last week because she's not one of the people who knew Emily, so she can't be involved in all of their grief counseling.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like, so she's essentially, like, left out of last week's episode. So she finally gets something to do this week, but it's like, you've been on the show, like, you had a focus in your first episode, and you've been on the show 10 more episodes, and this is the first time you've had a meaningful number of lines in any of those episodes. It's crazy.
And just I'm trying.
How, yeah.
Anyway.
Well, yep. And the thing is, we'll talk at the end of this episode about something else that's going on behind the scenes. But yeah, again, just, it really does make you focus because she's good in what she does in this episode. And it makes you focus on, well, wow, you know, Rachel Nichols should have been used much better by this show. And I'm glad she got two other shows after this because they really could have used her here, but she never, again, as like we were saying last week, set up to fail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, set up to fail never had a chance. It's frustrating as hell. But what's interesting here is why I say this episode is so disappointing is they did the Ed Kemper story without any of the interesting parts of the Ed Kemper story. Because I'm going to say something slightly controversial, right? Which is, and maybe you can disagree with me, I have no idea why this guy is killing people. Okay. Ed Kemper is a fascinating case, right? Because he was so monstrously abused, by his mother, right? He was turned into a monster from a very young age in this really disturbing self-fulfilling prophecy. And it's like, she decided her son was a monster when he was three. And she treated him like a monster his whole childhood. And the weird part is, it's like, other people, this isn't just, a killer justifying himself. Other people described the way she treated him when he was young.
Yeah.
Right? And he lashed out and he killed his grandmother and then he killed his grandfather and he went to jail. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got out and the terrifying part was that it's like, if he had stayed in a mental institution, another 5 years, he might have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
But they turned 18, and instead of saying, let's keep him in a mental institution, the mother says, I'll bring him home. And I can only imagine what a nightmare that home life was like after he got home.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's killed her parents. And they're mm-hmm. living in the same house. And the thing is, he was so cowed by his mother, right? That he had to lash out against all of these other women to get up the nerve to kill his mother, which is what he wanted to do all along.
Mm-hmm.
And then as he realized that, oh, I'm fundamentally broken even after I've killed my mother, I'm not better, he turned himself into the cops. It's the most fascinating story of any serial killer. And the thing that I find so frustrating watching these episodes, this episode is, like, this kid doesn't have that backstory.
Mm-mm.
You know? Like, he had a crush on his nanny. Mm-hmm. And the dad married the nanny. And he started acting out by killing animals. And then they threw him in a mental institution. Right? And he stabbed somebody and they threw him in a mental institution. And after he got out, I don't understand. If it's that simple a relationship, if there's no layers to it, if there's no history of brutal childhood abuse, right? If it is just a brain disorder, as we're expected to believe, that he just had one of those brain construction disorders that can happen with kids from time to time, I don't understand why he doesn't just go straight for his stepmother after he gets out of the insane asylum.
Mm-hmm. Like,
nothing about him makes you think he's got to build up confidence.
Mm-mm.
You know, like, you get why the actual Ed Kemper had to build up confidence. It's his mother. It's a lifetime of abuse that has turned him into this. Whereas this is like a relatively shallow sexual obsession with his nanny then stepmother. It doesn't have the same depth to it. It doesn't have the same psychological heft to it. And I don't understand why he's got to kill all this, these other women who look like her to get up the nerve. It just doesn't make sense to me.
And my line would be, why do you expect anything else?
Okay. I'm naive.
It's part of why we watch it, because it is, you know, the funny thing is sometimes I think it's almost so sad. There's so many things they could have done with mm-hmm. this show and they didn't do any of it.
No.
In the end, I mean, they do bits and pieces every now and then. You have these wonderful things that show you that they had the possibility.
Yeah.
And they failed. Mm-hmm. And the question is, why did they fail and why do they make so many mistakes? And,
yeah.
And I keep going back. I mean, these days I've been on and off. I watch these different shows, but I will tell you the consistency in those shows is far greater. They make fewer continuity errors. Clearly they have their characters and that clearly they have their structures down. Like I saw one slight mistake in Bones. I went, oh no, but that's like one of the first times I've seen something yeah. that was okay.
The weird part is like, and I think part of the reason for that is why I started doing these reviews in the first place, which is it's incredibly hard to write about profiling solving crimes, because profiling doesn't solve crimes. Like, a show like Bones is comparatively very easy to write.
Yeah.
Literally, all you have to do is say, okay, well, she finds a set of bones. She's like, okay, well, this bones got signs that he was stabbed with this kind of knife. Let's do a Google search for who bought that kind of knife. Okay, let's go arrest that guy.
Well, you know, yeah.
I know it's not that simple.
It's you don't have to tell me it's not that, that simple. But
there
yeah.
was honestly an episode of Bones. Yeah. This is going to sound like I'm lying. There was an episode of Bones where they found like a weird dent in someone's ribs. And then a character actually said, let's run this against our database of every tool mark that has ever existed. Oh, it's a dental drill. You have a database of every tool mark that has ever existed?
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm not saying,
You're not saying don't Bones is perfect, by any means.
No, that it's, even that it's really all that good a show, at times it drives me crazy too, right? But it doesn't drive me crazy in the same way that this one does.
No, because the thing is, there is this potential with this show to dig into the psychology of murderers, to deal with how it is nurture that causes this thing, to say something real. And every now and then they say something real.
Right? Yeah.
Bones is never going to say anything real. You know, Bones is a show where people with, like, I don't know, magic computer hacking skills reprogram computers via barcodes.
You know? Look, the thing about, and their politics is all over the world too.
Oh God,
sometimes. Yeah. It's so funny. But the thing is, with Bones, the writer isn't very good anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
You're not expecting much.
Like, so the TV show is better than the books, for heaven's sakes. You know?
That's so mean.
Well, no.
I don't doubt that you're right, but that's so mean to say.
I mean, I've tried to read a couple of them and it just went, oh, this is not worth my time. Whereas Bones has got some interesting characters and they do have things happen to them and they do have a consistency and somebody, and Criminal Minds seems to have thought that profiling, I think that's it, that profiling could answer all of those questions, like could somehow or another miraculously, they solve everything. And of course profiling can't. And as we have learned, other shows that try and do profiling or at least are in the same ballpark as Criminal Minds understood what they were doing a lot better than this show in the end understands what it's doing. If it had gone weird, okay, like if it had gone into the supernatural, but no, there's no consistency. No, we've got to,
and I think it's a perfect example of just like all over the map of going some, they'll do a completely fantastical episode one week and then a week later, they will do something like this that is just the most basic horror movie nonsense in the world.
Yeah, but if it was telling you that it was horror movie nonsense, fine.
But yeah,
from your horror movies, you do not sit there and ask, does this make any sense? No.
And to do an episode, you're right. And so to do an episode like this, right after an episode where they do just a brutal portrayal of what untreated grief can transform you into. It just feels like it's disrespecting the episode we just watched.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly it. It's, you know, because there are some episodes, as you know, where I just have been very upset. You know, there are some episodes that the acting, and again, I would say even with Hanley Waters, it's the acting that overrides. It's Kelly, I can't remember her last name, but yeah, I mean, she just does a beautiful job of showing the deep, deep grief of this
anguish. Woman. It's anguish.
It's just she cannot stop and she can't kill herself.
Yeah.
And, you know, so this is the classic suicide by cop, except that that doesn't happen.
No.
But yeah, it's and then they do this kind of
episode right after.
Crap.
Immediately after is what makes it all the worse.
The acting is perfunctory.
At best.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
An episode with like nothing to it at all.
Yeah.
Not only, you know, not doing right by one of the most interesting stories in the history of serial killing, because he is that fascinating, but to do it in such a blah way, right after showing they have the capability to do something really interesting and really true.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. Like, it's a really frustrating episode of the show.
Yeah.
Made all the more frustrating because they're specifically calling out Ed Kemper by name in the episode, so we'll know which case they're adapting this week.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's a nothing episode, but it's really frustrating in its own way because of it.
Yeah.
All right, so next week we're going to be wrapping up the season. Would you care to give us a preview of what three episodes we're going to be watching?
Going to do. Out of the Light,
Okay.
Big C.
Oh my God, Big C. That's the Derek's cousin episode, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fascinating. Okay. Nice.
And then Supply and Demand.
Oh my God, the worst episode of Criminal Minds!
And we all know who wrote it.
Is it, it's an Erica Messer episode?
Of course.
Of course it is!
Whenever you start screaming about terrible episodes, I'm going
to... Oh my God, it's like, it's an episode that's so bad. I wouldn't be surprised if it's one of the longest reviews I've ever written, because not one moment of it makes sense. Like, not one moment. Like, it's the dumbest episode you've ever seen of this show. Oh, it's so bad. And the thing is, it's actually, I have seen two other episodes recently that specifically call back to how dumb the plot of Supply and Demand was. Like, specific thing happens twice, because the entire overarching plot of season 9 is a redo of Supply and Demand, except dumber. And then it comes up again in season 11. Sorry, season 10, not season 9. Yeah, the entire overarching plot of season 10 is we're trying to do Supply and Demand and fix it, but they actually did it worse. And then it comes up again in season 11.
And then they went to Criminal Minds what did they call it? Borders?
Yeah, Beyond Borders, which, oh God, well that's a whole other conversation.
We'll get there.
We may actually be talked into, depending if people want to hear it, we might actually watch Criminal Minds Beyond Borders.
Well, I think we have to do the completest thing.
Yeah, we're probably
going to. We've been avoiding saying that we were going to do that, but now that we've started doing these other things, right,
if we're watching Suspect Behavior, yeah. I don't know if we can justify not watching Beyond Borders.
That's the problem, yeah.
That is the real issue.
And I don't want to watch Beyond Borders, but I will.
It's just going to be us yelling about America every week for like 8 weeks.
Which is why we're definitely going to do those as bonus episodes.
In fact, those are definitely going to be bonus episodes.
Whenever we decide to do that, what we'll do is do something else as our in-between episode.
And you're right. Beyond Borders will just be bonus episodes. All right.
You may not want to, honestly,
we're both Canadians. We both hate American xenophobia and racism. And just expect to, if you don't want to hear liberal Canadians talking about America, just take a pass on our entire series about Criminal Minds Beyond Borders. That is, just take a pass. 100%
American exceptionalism. Holy shit.
The show.
Yeah, American exceptionalism, the show. That's the thing that gets you about bones, eh? I mean, I still remember their J. Edgar Hoover episode, conspiracy episode. In other words, supposedly what happens is there's this conspiracy and they try to kill Booth and blah, 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 blah. Who cares?
Yeah.
But what happens, right? The whole bottom line of this is that J. Edgar Hoover, right, had all of these
files.
We all know this. And supposedly they were all destroyed when he died. However, they weren't.
Of course not.
And so what happened was this one guy. And so they have this big discussion about the Constitution. And of course, the guy who is J. Edgar Hoover's assistant's stepson is the one who's got them and is still continuing to use them as he sees fit. And he starts talking about the founding fathers and elitism.
Oh my God.
And he doesn't bring up the Electoral College, which is why the Electoral College exists, is because the founding fathers were elitists and
make sure the rich people stay in power.
Well, and they didn't trust the rabble. Right.
What did I just say?
Yeah. And I'm sitting there listening to this and of course Booth is blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah. Not one person said, right, that actually this guy is right.
This
now,
guy has a really good point. Should he be doing this? Should he be killing people? Probably not.
Should he be killing people? Probably not. That's not, but his discussion of the Constitution. Well, you've got your idea of the Constitution and I've got mine. Well, he actually wasn't saying anything about the Constitution. What he was talking about was the Founding Fathers, right? Yeah.
And the institutional inequalities baked into America right from its start.
Into the Constitution from its start. Yeah. And that's why the Electoral College is there.
College exists. So, yeah.
And
one of my favorite, I think,
historians that would disagree with me, I don't think.
No, of course not. They talk about it in the Federalist Papers. I mean, that's like, we can't trust the people with elections. That's what the Electoral College is for. They can just vote for electors. I mean, here's how much of the, and this is the last thing I'll say about this. Well, I have one other thing actually, but it's like, here's how much they thought of America as a boys club run by the rich upper class. When they wrote the Constitution and set up the country, the person who was vice president was the guy who got the second most votes. That was in there. Because that's how you run a cigar club. The president of the cigar club is whoever gets the most votes. The guy who's second in command of the cigar club is the guy who gets the second most votes. That's how they treated America at its inception. Don't trust the Founding Fathers, okay?
Sorry.
I'm not wrong. But anyway, now I'll tell you the reason I stopped watching Bones. There was an episode, and I know there have been fun episodes since, and I've seen fun episodes since. People every now and then point out to me, oh, you gotta watch the one where they flash back and they're in the 60s. You gotta watch the one where they're all locked up. You gotta watch the one about the cannibal, like the arc about the cannibal serial killer. I know there's good stuff, right? But here's when I stopped watching the show, and it was, again, because of the show's politics. They do the episode where they want to find out if JFK was shot by two different
gunmen.
Oh, yes!
Yes.
Okay. And he was. And Booth gives a whole speech.
Oh, I know.
About how, did I shoot people? I used to murder people for the government. If my government could have killed its own president, right? Or at least covered up the fact that he was assassinated by multiple people, then who was I shooting all of these people for? And I just want to be, I had to stop it and be like, bitch! Killing Kennedy is like the 80th worst thing your government has ever done.
Like, this is the one that you're going to hang your hat on?
I'm going to point out a little thing called Wounded Knee. Just Google Wounded Knee. Google the Trail of Tears. Google poisoning people with uranium just to see what would happen. Google to...
Syphilis. Let's
yeah, the syphilis experiments. Google... the entire South for the entirety of American history.
Oh, I
Google the Drug Enforcement Administration. The idea that Kennedy would be a tipping point? No. You were shooting people for the bad guys, okay? You were always shooting people for the bad guys, Booth. And it's like, I can understand accepting that and just being an American and going with it, but the idea that the Kennedy assassination is some kind of a breaking point, it means it's like, you are a man who has never thought about your government and its actions ever. And I believe you will continue never thinking about them ever from this episode on.
Oh, well, no, because he ends up in jail because of this particular conspiracy, and his government could do something like this. Right.
I'm glad that paid off eventually. But then David Boreanaz went on to play a guy in Seal, so, you know.
Well, yes, as I said, like Derek, David Boreanaz does type, it's a typecasting. And it worked really well in Buffy.
Yeah.
Because Buffy had no level of reality to it, right?
It's true.
We all know that Buffy wasn't true and it didn't happen.
But this, when you start bringing this thing into the real world, it's...
Yeah, when you're trying to... And
it gets very iffy.
You know, and... you know, you just go, okay, yeah. I mean, and it's not my politics. It's that has to be. It's just when they try and inject, you know. It's really weird in these shows. And they've done some very good episodes on Veterans Affairs and things like that. Cool.
But sometimes the politics are just icky.
Well, sometimes.
And I'm gonna use an example. I'll tell you a story afterward on the show about that.
Okay.
But we'll get there. Right now, I'm sorry if we ran you off with all of this politics and bone talk. If you made it here to the end, we really appreciate it. We can promise no politics next week. We're just going to be talking about the worst episode of Criminal Minds in the first six seasons. So I think that's going to be pretty fun. So if you have any questions, if you have any comments, if you'd like to suggest some profiling related fiction we should check out, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We will see you back here next week for those episodes of Criminal Minds. And if you are going to be listening along with Suspect Behavior, I would suggest you get those DVDs or whatever now, because just 1 week after this next episode, we are going to be doing the first two episodes of Suspect Behavior, and then we're back to Criminal Minds Season 7, and Suspect Behavior is going to be Monday bonus episodes. I know I already said this week, but I'm just making sure we all get it locked in our heads. So I guess that's that. We'll see you back here next time, but until then, au revoir.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.